Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. United Healthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hey guys, before this show starts, just want to let you know that over on Red Men Plus, our subscription service, we've got tons and tons of Liverpool content in podcast form as well. You love podcasts, we love making podcasts. Go and check it all out. That's redmenplus.com. Sign up for as little as £5 a month. You will not regret it. Now, enjoy the show.
Hello everyone, welcome to the Red Men TV, welcome to the Red Men TV podcast for our super crossover extraordinaire, a sort of biannual crossover where we remember
is this every
that we
2 years or every 6 months?
Well, yeah, it can be both.
It's biannual because you'll come to ours once a year as well. So we are getting two a year, but they've just got to cross over.
We had family friends that were a bit like that. Like once they come to ours from London at Easter, we go down to theirs in the summer, we'd have a great old time, you know what I mean? Share some good memories, share some good times, and then
go our separate ways and live our separate lives.
Each other in October. Are these people? What are these people doing?
Yeah. It's a bit like that, the bit in Shaun of the Dead where they cross over with another very similar looking sorts of people in the alleyway, and it's like, yeah, little knowing nods. We see each other at the match or whatever. It's like, yeah, good. Yeah.
We were right by each other at the derby.
Yeah.
Like literally the same row.
In each other's pockets.
In each other's pockets at the derby. That was quite nice.
Yeah,
it was just a shame the result didn't go the way we wanted.
Absolutely.
Could have done a lot of crossover. Could have crossed over all the way back across the park.
Yeah.
I think me and Rob Gutman did cross over there. We were a little bit too close, to be honest with you.
He had one leg in his trousers and he had one in yours, given how close we were that day. Like it was very, 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 very busy indeed. It's been a going theme for a ways actually this season. Big fan of the people in the comments loving it at the moment. Adjit here saying this is like the Liverpool version of the Avengers. It's a bit more like, I think, if you manage to cross like the Avengers and the Justice League over in some regards, you know. But yeah, no, very, very good. Very, very glad to have Neil Atkinson in here, of course. And if you don't, of course, recognise him, then host extraordinaire of the Anfield Rap. Believe it or not, we've got a few things to talk about on the
So just for the purposes of the viewers and listeners, so we decided to do this about a month ago.
Yeah.
And I remember looking at it thinking, well, it'll be a quiet one. Look forward to the Derby County game, bit of Ben Duck chat.
You schedule your Derby County final.
It'll be a lightish week, that'll be good. I'm away the week before, I'm away the week after. So this'll be perfect, it'll sit in quite nicely. And then yesterday happens.
I know. Well, interesting.
At least you weren't tweeting asking who your 1 o'clock was. That was one of my favourite tweets of the entire year. I've exhausted all opportunities here. I've got no idea. If someone's got a 1 o'clock with me, will you please let me know what it is? What was it?
I still don't know. So I still don't know if I let someone down or what. No one came back to me and no one chased me, but I definitely had, it was in the calendar, I definitely had something in. It would just said meeting. And it still remains a mystery. So if anyone was my 1 o'clock, do let me know.
It might be like Fry's dog in Futurama. There's just someone sat there still at a table, forlornly waiting for you to arrive for a significant moment in their life. I think we've kind of we've got a super chat here, which kind of sells a lot of the conversation we're going to have here. Sean P. Casey saying, "Forget models. I want the money. I want all the money. I want it now. I want world dominance. I want all the belts." Well, yeah, we're going to be having a heavy old conversation around Fenway Sports Group and Liverpool ownership, because really what else is there? There is, of course, Liverpool drawing Real Madrid. There is, of course, as mentioned, Liverpool playing Derby County in a League Cup, which could have... I was ready for a really interesting, fascinating chat about how bananas our team selection was going to be for Wednesday, but... No, in the bin because of David Ornstein and his stupid investigative sports journalism having to find out things. So yeah, we're going to be doing there's a poll, by the way, that Joe's just thrown in. Do you want morals or all the money? Feel free to vote in the poll live now in the YouTube chat. But yeah, we will be discussing kind of what yesterday was all about, how we all experienced it, what we know so far, and then in part two we're going to be kind of talking about what happens next, and probably tying that back into some similar experiences that we've shared from the last time Liverpool went through a change in ownership and what have you. But yeah, all that to come. If you're live with us, make sure you do interact with us in the live show chat and all that good stuff as well. Yeah, we have a very, very brief message from us before we dive into all that. We've got a live show coming this Sunday. Here's some details on that. Hello to all you wonderful podcast listeners. Sorry to interrupt what I'm sure is an absolutely spellbinding show. We would strongly appreciate it if you guys would consider joining us on RevMen Plus. If you like the podcast that you get for free in your podcasting app, then you can get more on RevMen Plus. Podcast, interviews, documentaries, and a whole host more as well. And if you're on Spotify, you can also subscribe straight in the Spotify app for RevMen Plus podcasts. But if you want the full hit, head over to revmenplus.com and join us on another magical season.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Yes, get involved. Last chance saloon, last few days, get your tickets sorted for Sunday. Yeah, exclusive to RevMen Plus subscribers. You get 2 free tickets if you sign up. The code will be emailed to you instantly when you join up. And then you just go to Skiddle, put that in, get your tickets, and come and party with Mr. Sunday Night there. who is ready, willing, and able.
I cannot wait. I'm going to be all over that bar.
I mean, there's a chance Neil will still be stumbling around town at some point, but come Sunday afternoon.
I'm having a big Saturday. I'm having a very, very, very big Saturday. If you see me on Saturday, I mean, it's a decision. You can come and get involved or you can not, but just be aware of the fact that it's going to be a big Saturday. I feel like all of our energies are pointed towards this game.
Yeah.
And it's weird because it's not the last game of the season. It's not a final. It's none of the obvious hits. It's just a 3 o'clock at Anfield against Southampton. That's all it is. And I am very committed to 3 a.m. in town after the 3 p.m. against Southampton. Yeah. I've got a 3 a.m. strategy.
Big Pop World vibes.
Something like that.
Sad. Right, okay, let's dive into it then. Monday, David Ornstein from out of nowhere, Chris, dropping the bomb. It was interesting to kind of follow the Redmen timeline because I was in Manchester at the time for the overlap. I'm having a nice spot of lunch before it all kicked off. It was dropped in Discord, then it was dropped in our Redmen family group, then it was dropped by us subsequently into the work group, and then by all accounts it was, yeah, you had an Avengers Assemble moment in the studio.
Very much like we were all shooting the shit around the pool table, to be quite honest with you, taking the piss out of something that we thought was quite amusing. And we'd been doing that for a good, I don't know, 40 minutes or something. We kind of lost track of time, and then I went into my office and just opened up WhatsApp, and then all of a sudden it was a scream of holy shit, like, and then within probably a minute minute 30, we decided the next 2 hours of plan. And everyone just dissipated and they just went their separate ways. I grabbed now with my laptop. Within about 8 minutes of receiving the news, I was live for 45 minutes. We'd planned then, obviously, the Red Men Reacts for Red Men Plus. And then we'd obviously started to get guests in for expert insight and stuff like that that we wanted to try and get sorted. So it's always, you'll probably find this, when those type of things happen, that's when it's the most fun for me. Like, and when everybody really just like, we've all been waiting to get our teeth into something for such a long time now, because we've been used to Liverpool being really good. We're a little bit depressed that Liverpool are a little bit shit, and some genuine news to talk about is really interesting.
Yeah, I thought I was in the slaughterhouse having a breakfast. I'd not planned my Monday particularly efficiently, so I'd had nothing to eat after we finished our show at 12. So I mooched over to the slaughterhouse, got my order, which is the very large breakfast, as you can tell from the size of me in this shirt, added to which a pint of water, a cup of tea, and half a fresh orange and half a lemonade, rehydrating from the night before. So I knew what my wants and needs were, nailed that, and then I'm just sort of casually on my phone, and suddenly there is the Ornstein thing, and all immediately, I think it was Hannon, Craig Hannon, immediately, "Where are you?" "I'm in the slaughterhouse, I can be back in 5.
But I had the initial, did anyone else do the initial thing where you saw the tweet and it was like, I nearly didn't click the link, because I said, this has got all the hallmarks of sex noise video written all over it, you know what I mean? This is like in the sort of FSG out furore that we've had, particularly exacerbated this season. I was very, very like, I'm not sure I want to. Is this, and again, is that definitely David Ornstein's Twitter handle? It's mad that I had to question its legitimacy.
I checked that. Yeah, I checked the first thing. I was like, is that definitely Ornstein? It is Ornstein. Is this an Elon Musk thing? Have I got to think about this now? No, okay, sounds. We're on. There we go. It is. And reading through it on The Athletic, and you know the thing about it is, it's all in what's said and unsaid, and it's, you know, and it's all in what's denied and what's not denied, and that's one of the problems with this. There's a genuine sort of, they're not going to, you know, I think that some people on the one hand will not believe that Liverpool could well be, there's a possibility the whole of Liverpool is sold, or at least 89% of Liverpool is sold, depending on what Redbird's agreement is and amongst all of this, that unless John Henry turns up on the telly and goes, this is what's happening. Yeah. The flip side is there's other people who are like, well, this is just obviously going to be the end of this process and it's all going to happen in the next 24 hours. And you're like, well, that might not be true either. And it's the vagaries of it, I think, are what's difficult. And then you're back to the fact that first and foremost, both us and the people that we're speaking to, and it's nice that people do listen, we're football supporters first and foremost. We're not experts in high finance. We're talking here about a deal that's $4 billion US dollars in all likelihood, in that sort of vicinity, if not more, for the whole thing. So for 25%, it becomes, is it $1 billion US dollars? But then does someone want to come in and put $1 billion US dollars in and not have control and interest? These are quite complicated conversations for people who have a background in high finance, let alone people whose background is fundamentally whether or not Fabarelio is or isn't better in the pantheon of, well, yeah, that as well, but is or isn't better in the pantheon of Liverpool left backs than, yeah, e.g. Stigging a Bjornaby. Yeah. So you're finding yourself, oh, come on, man.
Stigging Bjornaby got a lot of assists.
He did, but Fab was, it was a wonderful left foot. Why
don't you get a wonder of a right foot?
Because left footed players, they're rarer, they're more magical.
I agree with this. Trent's got a wand of a right. Can we not start using that?
He's also got a wand of a left, which he showed at the weekend as well, which was sort of glossed over.
Stigging Bjornaby was better than Fabio Aurelio.
You picked the wrong player for this,
just,
Neil.
I'm not going to get stuck
into Stig. I like Højbjerg Leonardsen too, okay? Sue me.
He was busy.
And I've no time for Daniel Agger. You're a strange cat.
There's an odd Norwegian outlook, but you're left sort of trying to pick the bones out of this, aren't you? And you're trying to do it quickly as well, to work it all through, but the best thing to do is just have an honest emotional reaction to it first and foremost, because that's what people have got as well. And I think it's quite a complicated emotional reaction. I think it's interesting when you suddenly have to engage with the reality of, well, what's next, if something is going to be next. And I still think there's four possible outcomes, and that, you know, from what's out there, they all feel about as likely as each other, but you're left going, well, what's next? And then within that, you've got to try to sort of process through, and then we get back to the poll. Do you want the morals or do you want the money?
Yeah, absolutely.
I think for me, I'm looking at the words that David Ornstein used, and I'm trusting David Ornstein is a great journalist who does his job properly, and who isn't looking for the sensationalist headlines that he's already been accused of. Mm. Now, the fact of the matter is, for me, already, I did the video yesterday, got loads of people tweeting me going, read the statement, Chris, read the statement. I'm like, this is what happens when a journalist approaches a company with inside knowledge of something. They have to give a statement, and they've given the most vague of all statements there, which is just to protect themselves and the value in the company that they may or may not be trying to sell.
To protect the process.
Yeah, of course.
To protect the process.
So I have no doubts that Liverpool are up for sale, whether that be as a percentage or, more likely for me, based on absolutely fucking nothing, the club is up for sale properly, because I trust in the journalistic instincts and writing ability and investigative journalism that is David Ornstein.
But the statement's very FSG, and you go all the way back to them initially coming in and being like, kind of like, we're just gonna do stuff, and then we'll talk about it once it's done. You know, we're not gonna give you loads of promises other than the top line mission statement of sustainability and, you know, and reinvigorating the club or whatever. But in stark contrast to what Hicks and Gillette were, which was all these really like headline Brexity Tory, you know, like, you know, election style. Here's the big things we're gonna give you: a shiny toy car and every kid gets a Dairy Triangle and all that. Whereas this has got that whole thing of they're kind of protecting themselves with it, because if they can't find a suitable sale, if they're going, the club's definitely up for sale. I think that sets fire to everything around them at one time, and it doesn't mean they're not up for sale, but it's quite canny. The vagaries are quite canny in how they've chosen to do it.
I think you've got to have that within it all. You know, it looks to me as though there's four possible outcomes from this point. One is that they end up selling the club, lock, stock, and it goes to somebody else or to a conglomerate of other people. The second option is nothing changes. They have a little look, then no offers come in. And then basically there's whether or not they're looking for an investment, which basically means that they've probably tripled their original sort of ask, but still hold about 65% of the club. Or the flip side, which is that they end up being minority shareholders because somebody comes in and they're going to be majority shareholders, and they themselves think, well, you know what, we've done well out of this, the rest of it's now just enjoyment money, because you never know, it could go bang. Because I think the thing to remember with Fenway Sports Group is that it's all about risk, and it's a hedge fund. Yeah. And I think in this moment there is a set of circumstances that means that Liverpool Football Club could go on to be worth twice as much as it's worth now, and there's a set of circumstances which means Liverpool Football Club could go on to be worth half as much as it's worth now. Mm-hmm. I don't think it necessarily goes much beneath half as much as it's worth now. Mm-hmm. And there's obviously a time limit on the growth in the opposite direction. And I think that from Fenway's point of view, therefore, there's different forms of being able to exit now, mitigate that risk, maximise reward, and end up either with some shares or with none. A lot of this is statement to the obvious, and where this is difficult to talk to a football audience is there'll be some people in your comments going, yeah, of course, you idiot, that's what happens. Yeah. And then there'll be other people in the comments going, hang on, can you just explain that again?
Yeah.
Because everyone's got a different understanding of this, and it's difficult to therefore
and a different
do
desire
our,
for
and a different desire for understanding, so it's difficult to do our jobs in a couple of ways, because the one thing I don't want to do is be patronising to anyone on the one hand, but the other thing you don't want to do is be boring either. So you want to try and sort of accelerate this conversation into a certain space, but it's difficult because you want to bring people with you, and we've got to sort of bear that in mind. There's some people who just don't particularly want to engage with this, but know that they now have to because this is the reality that's on them. Where that ends up, I think Fenway Sports Group themselves don't actually know yet. Mm-hmm. And I think that that's going to be the difficult thing. I think there's a lot of people who are going to say, I think what's key is they are open to all four of those eventualities that I've just described. And it's possibly the first time they're open to all four of those eventualities.
Yeah.
And I think that's what's changed. That's what the Ornstein piece is actually about. For the first time, Liverpool are open. Fenway Sports Group's ownership of Liverpool is open in quite a public way now to all four of these eventualities. So what happens next?
Yes.
And what happens next is there's a massive vacuum, and there's going to be a lot of bullshit that fills that vacuum. There really, really is, so prepare yourself for that. There's going to be a lot of nonsense that fills that vacuum. There's going to be a lot of stuff that manages to try to link something as banal as the acquisition of Jude Bellingham into that vacuum. That's going to happen as well. And that's not really all that relevant, I don't think. And I think that having a good system of working out this is relevant, this isn't relevant, is the next difficult thing
to
do.
The problem is it's ultra relevant to a lot of people, and that's the problem. When, you know, just to update us on the poll, 48% of people want us to keep our models, 52% want all the money. And of course, look, it's a jokey poll done on a you know, what even day this is, this Tuesday morning on YouTube. And again, there's a lot of, I mean, this, we had a lot of this around, I know I always bring it back to Brexit, but it was a huge thing. I know for a fact that if I was 10 years younger when the Brexit vote happened, I'd have voted for Brexit. only to watch the world burn because it was fascinating. Same reason I voted Lib Dem, because I just want, I just suckered into the rhetoric of let's just do something different and let's see what this kind of looks like without realising, oh, you might have to live in that world and what and ramifications. So there'll be a lot of people there. And I'm seeing there's a guy here saying, basically along the lines of, I mean, if I can find the actual comments, but it's basically, I've had enough of models and blah, blah, blah. I just want us to get all the money in and go toe-to-toe with City. And my biggest problem with this is that, are you still? Is it still Liverpool? You know, at that point, if it gets sold to a different type, to a certain type of ownership group, and I don't want to get lost into that. They can be for anywhere in the world, by the way. I just mean anyone who just totally and utterly is at the exact opposite end of the spectrum to the models that we kind of try and hold on to. That is it still Liverpool? They'll wear the kit and they'll have the badge, but is it this? And it's a bit like. It's a bit like people who go to war over Xbox and PlayStation, and it's like they're the fucking same thing. Honestly, if you go and put a game side by side, if you can tell me the difference between a game and how it runs on a PlayStation compared to an Xbox, this is not Amiga versus Atari in the fucking 80s and the 90s where there was a significant difference between things. Everything's basically the same now. They just slap a different badge on it and you watch the same thing. That's my biggest problem with all of this, and I think there's a ton of people out there, Chris, who that's how they consume football, that's how they want football to be.
I want to take it back to before Ownstein's article, and because I think there's, you know, I think Neil's quite right. He's saying something's changed. Well, the something is that Liverpool are up for sale. You know, the four possibilities that you spoke about. Well, let's take it back to the reasons of why and why can you put yourself into FSG sort of heads at the moment and let's think about what's happening in the world. You know, there's a potential 10-year financial crisis coming into play. You have a lot of uncertainty. I'm going to take it back even further. The mistakes that FSG have made, I think, have been mainly around the European Super League. Obviously, we'll mention Liverpool and all that as mistakes, but the European Super League, I think, massively affected their outlook for Liverpool Football Club from a financial point of view. And I also think the way that FFP has been applied over the last few years, when we know that, you know, FSG really wanted FFP to be applied properly. So, well, hang on a minute, we can compete with them in a financial fair play world where it is absolutely 100% done properly. Can we compete with Newcastle United upcoming? Can we compete with the Manchester Cities? Can we compete with PSG over the next 10 to 15 years without Jurgen Klopp? Because at some point he is going to go. Without the likes of a Michael Edwards, do we have that trust in the process that actually is one league title in 10 years going to be enough? Manchester City, the way things are going now, look like they're going to win 8 of 10. Yeah. That's for me is a simple fact. Yeah. They've won 4 of 5 for a start. Mm. They're probably going to win 8 of 10 unless Newcastle step things up massively. When they break into the European football and they start to actually win those trophies as well, it could be very, very difficult. So is now the perfect point when Liverpool are at the closest to Manchester City in terms of commercial revenues, in terms of the team on the pitch and everything else? Is this all feeding into this decision? Have FSG realised that to compete with the likes of Manchester City, PSG, Newcastle United, all these types of clubs, they actually might not have the money and the formula to compete over 10 to 15 years' time, and that is maybe why it's a good time to sell?
I wonder whether, and again, City's accounts coming out on the same day could just be pure coincidence, or whether there's a thing ahead of that. But the whole,
or they really didn't fancy Real Madrid in the Champions League.
yeah.
It's one of the two.
Yeah, not enough of them pricks went off. But you know, that it was Carragher made a bit of a jokey point about it. And I think a few of us have made this kind of joke in a day that saw City announce that they'd, you know, outstripped Man United in commercial revenues and done, you know, the biggest commercial revenues and the biggest jump that anyone's seen in a year and all this kind of stuff. Whether that's something that's informed conversation, FSG have gone, well, what the fuck are we meant to do? Because we're not prepared to go down that route. There's another whole set of people you have to have on your books if you want to be able to make that kind of thing happen. And we all know what I'm talking about without having to, you know, be on the nose with it. You know, people, there's a great thing from Sport and Intel where, you know, like the person who was one of the founders of the betting partnership, and their LinkedIn profile picture is also used for some like random cam girl site, and it's all over the internet because it's not a real person. Anyway, but it does make you think, doesn't it, of that, whether they've been impacted by that on the day, probably not, but there's no way that's not in your thinking of they're the rules of the game. And we have a problem with this, I think, is like there's fucking lefties of like when you see how the right approach things, and it's because there's a lot of sociopathy that goes into that, and they're going, we're just playing the rules of the game here. The rules have changed. You might not like the rules, but if you don't engage with the rules, then you're not going to win.
I think they feel as though the rules haven't been enforced, and I think that that's, and I think they've felt that for a while, and I think they've been feeling that since, almost since about 2012, to be honest with you, with different ways, different things that have come out at different times. So I think that does play a part. I think if that is one of the things they're looking at now, just thinking, well, that's a direction of travel that, not even that we can't live with, that we don't want to live with, that we, you know, it's not for us, and, you know, we might want to distance ourselves from that. We don't need to be in that world. Let's remember, all of this is a choice. You know, they're not obliged to do anything. Now they do own the football club, and there's obligations that come around that, but the idea of, you know, if they choose to extricate themselves from that because they think, well, this is now a rigged game, because that's the question. The question is this now a rigged game? And I think it is a rigged game, and I think in different ways it's always been a rigged game. Let's be clear about that. And there's been times where the game's been rigged in our favour. Let's be clear about that as well. Yeah. But I think it is a rigged game. Simultaneously, that doesn't mean you can't play it. It doesn't mean you can't win at it as well. You know, I take your point about City in eight out of 10 titles, but it is sort of worth pointing out that no one knows what it looks like when Guardiola goes. True. It's also worth pointing out that Guardiola's contract's still up next summer and he's not signed a new one.
Yeah.
You know, there's ins and outs around that. The Newcastle thing, yep, no shadow of a doubt, but then realistically, away, it's a rigged game. As it looks as though UEFA are going to start having five Champions League places for English sides. That's on its way as well. I think in amongst all the stuff that they've got right or wrong, if you almost park that for a minute, and amongst a lot of the stuff where they've got it wrong, so Project Big Picture and the European Super League, Project Big Picture, by the way, I don't think the idea of changing the structure of English football is wrong. I think that the way in which they were going about it and what happened to them and the fact that they weren't able and chose not to go out and argue for it is an issue.
Yeah.
But, and also the fact that they haven't backed the Crouch Review, I think is wrong. And I think it's actually counterproductive to Liverpool's wants and needs, because what the Crouch Review will give will be the opportunity to have a regulator backed by a state. If you want to build, if you want to beat state-run clubs, a regulator backed by a state able to go in and look at finances and look at deals in real time and say, are you messing with this? Are you messing with this? And whether or not that would work is up in the air, but it's literally the only game in town.
Yeah.
And Liverpool have chosen not to, and Liverpool, run by Fenway Sports Group, have chosen not to back it publicly. And it was always, when the manager was talking the other week, the follow-up question that wasn't asked, that should have been asked, was, so did you back the Crouch Review? At which point, I don't know what he would have said, but it would have been difficult for him, because the club haven't, and they've chosen not to do that. And let's be crystal clear, and that is the only way to stop it being as much of a rigged game. But what's in Project Big Picture, and what's in the European Super League, and why Redbird are in, and what's still there for Fenway Sports Group or for anyone else, especially where Liverpool's concerned, is owning your own media rights.
Yeah.
And that is a game changer. So this is back to my four options. And I think one of the things that Project Big Picture had in writing, the European Super League had in writing, was the idea that clubs could screen their own games.
Yeah.
Not all of them. It wasn't the idea of getting rid of Sky. But if we imagine the turnover of LFC TV in a universe where LFC TV can screen eight games exclusively live a season,
yeah,
to where the turnover of LFC TV is now, it is night and day.
Yeah.
And that is the thing that puts you back competitive with Manchester City,
yeah,
in a way that they don't have that option. It's a rigged game, everyone will say. It's a rigged game. It's now the elite clubs trying to protect their own, etc., etc. And that's something that would... And I think that that has been... As I say, it was in the small print of both of those proposals, but I think Liverpool were part of those proposals, and I think it's Liverpool's small print. That's what Liverpool wants.
Yeah.
You know, we are now, arguably, and FSG would argue, the most watched club in the world,
mm-hmm,
where the argument is that we are one of, if not the best supported club in the world. We're one of the big five, us, United, Bayern, Real and Barcelona, mm-hmm, at the very least. And what I think Fenway Sports Group have wanted to do, what Redbird have wanted to do, is leverage that into how do we turn that into cold hard cash. And what's difficult with the collective bargaining agreement, and what's difficult with the Saturday 3 p.m. blackout, and what's difficult with the way in which a lot of this stuff's already structured, is that you, I think if you want to say the Super League or Project Big Picture or whatever has knocked them back, I think it's knocked them back from what they want in terms of the media rights.
Yeah.
So this is a media rights conversation, I think. And I think that, as I say, that's why I say there's a universe where in 5 years' time this club's worth twice as much as it's worth now. There's a universe where in 5 years' time, which is your argument around your Newcastle, that there could be back, you know, could be backward steps, what happens when Klopp goes, it's worth half as much as it's worth now. And that's why this is a really interesting moment if you want to have a conversation about being a hedge fund and dealing in risk.
Yeah. It, again, the things that we're not privy to is just, again, it's what's there, what are they looking at? Because I've often said, when people talk about them, how they invest and how they've run Liverpool, it's that we forget sometimes that it's just part of a portfolio, and the game of hedge funds is just to grow the value of your portfolio. Well, it's actually not so much, it's all well and good getting $4 billion, but then you've got $4 billion in cash, but that doesn't grow, that's that, and you might just want it. I've seen this happen with small family groups where it's great having a bunch of properties, but sometimes you just want a bit of dough to spend on stuff for your life.
I think that's a really important point, because the next thing that we do is we act as though first they're the Fenway Sports Group or John Henry is this homogenous thing. Now, Henry owns a controlling share in Fenway Sports Group, but he's got a lot of other people who own shares in Fenway Sports Group, some of whom might be completely committed to the Liverpool project, some of whom might be saying, can we get the cash out now and either put it back into a couple of American sports, because we've said that that's our target, and we're not very cash rich at the minute. There's an upcoming global crisis that you're talking about. There's the idea of we want to move in this direction, but we act as though Fenway Sports Group thinks and exists with one voice, whereas the reality is John Henry probably has a lot of phone calls from different people who were saying, can we do a bit of this, can we do a bit of this, can we do a bit of this. And I think that that's an important point as well, not to act as though there is this sort of homogenous thing. It has to act like a homogenous thing, but it doesn't mean it's day to day.
And it's also why we forget sometimes that Liverpool's it's its own separate business, you know. And so why the Super League comes out, most people at Liverpool aren't aware that it's happening, because these guys just think of Liverpool as being it's like how you don't inform your kids about what you're going to be, what your summer holiday plans are going to be. You just turn around and tell them where they're going, and that's one thing that gets lost in it sometimes.
I think the other thing is as well, like going back onto the risk management and making money, that's what FSG are there to do. They're supposed to make money. That's what their company does. It just happens to own ours in the football club. Now
clarify that neither Redmen nor the Anfield Rap, because there might be a few people who think that's what's being said there. We'll definitely do that on podcast extra,
but we are for sale via Goldman Sachs.
Coincidentally.
Complete coincidence. There's an NFL franchise up for sale right now. It's the Washington Commanders. Used to be the Washington Redskins, changed the name. It's going to go for about $4 billion or something. But that league has one idea, and that idea is to make money for all of the owners of all of the clubs that play in it. Football doesn't work like that. Football isn't a money-making machine. In fact, it's a fucking hole for money. It will suck money out of the owners, and it will never really give massive returns on investments, whereas the NFL franchise are completely made the opposite way. Everything is about a collective bargaining agreement that gets one thing, the owners richer, and it's not very often that NFL franchises come up for sale. Now, I'm not saying that FSG are going to buy the Washington Commanders, but with £4 billion, you could buy a business that's probably going to make you more money than Liverpool Football Club.
And possibly be less stress.
Yes.
As well, to throw that bit in.
I mean, you might just want a private Twitter account for Linda. That might be the entire reason that you actually are. No, I can't deal with it anymore, John.
I think all of that, a key part of this, and that's a key part of sort of thinking about where this decision, or what frames this decision and decisions like this one, and where they come from. And I think that it's an important sort of bit. And as I say, this is why the bit I think is less significant, although there is also here, there's an emotional sort of push and pull. Like, there's a lot of chat about, and Liverpool need this rebuild, etc., etc. I don't think that's coming into it to a huge degree. I think there might be an element in there where there'll be a feeling around, well, we went there and we did what we said we'd do, which is, well, we won the first title in 30 years, and we did this and we did this, and we've currently got a huge sort of positive. They will feel they've got a, whether the people who watch this agree or disagree, they will feel that they've got a huge positive sort of column here of this is what we've achieved, what we've done there. We've improved the stadium, we've improved the infrastructure, we've improved the sporting side, we've improved the off the pitch sporting side, we've got this list, we've ticked the boxes, and there's the silverware to prove it. And it may well be that it's possible that they're thinking, well, we've got no real emotional attachment to this. We nailed that. And I think that that's possible. And I think that you've got to acknowledge that that could be in there as well, as part of the framing of this decision. But I think on all of it, though, I think the key thing that happens is genuinely what happens when they go to market. Because it may well be that they get an offer that they like, and it will come down to literally the figure. I think that the people who wonder if Fenway Sports Group will be worried about their Liverpool legacy are as full of shit as the people who worry about whether or not they're going to get Jude Bellingham as a leaving present. Like, it's two sides of the same coin. At this point, the job of Fenway Sports Group if they are leaving Liverpool, is to maximise the return on investment for the people who've invested in Fenway Sports Group. That's it. That's the job. Nothing else. Yeah. They haven't got to worry about a Liverpool legacy. They, you know, it's not like John Henry needs to worry about coming round to ours for tea.
Yeah.
And whether or not he's going to get a warm welcome. Yeah, does not care. Has barely set foot in the city anyway.
Yeah.
Full stop, you know, in terms of the length of time he's been here. You know, he's not worried about what they're going to think of him in Pogues.
They've been the Beatles story.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? They've done Matthew Street. They're not going to come back for a holiday. Yeah. So who gives a shit what you do to the city? It's the monorail episode of The Simpsons.
It's now time to clear out. If they've decided it's time to clear out. But I'll say again, it might be that they go through. They don't like the terms that they're offered in a number of different ways. They don't like the terms of a partial investment. They might not. I think the idea of who it is matters more if it's going to be someone who comes in either as a minority shareholder or a majority shareholder. I think if it's in full, it's different.
Yeah.
But I think we've got to work with these people. Well, you not sure?
It's the kind of put you right. Is that it's again when you go back to the value of the portfolio. If they can do a deal, that means that they get to at least maintain their value of the portfolio. So yeah, they sell a chunk, but in a short term, 2 to 3 years. That helps grow Liverpool. Liverpool can maintain their place at the top. The revenues keep going up, blah, blah, blah. And then, so eventually, yeah, it sticks at a $4 billion valuation in there. Then they probably would just stick around with that. Or if someone takes them on to more, and as you say, allows them to hold on long enough that it becomes an $8 billion asset, then they would probably be more likely to do that than sell it, because why would you get rid of something that's got a value?
Yeah, I think there's that, but I think there's also this, and this is where all these sorts of arguments come together, coalesce as one. At some point, the way the media is done is going to change. And when it does change, it will be in Liverpool's interests.
Yeah.
One way or another. And without rehearsing a Super League conversation, it's really funny. I saw someone who's perfectly intelligent, so I'm not going to name them, tweet about the Real Madrid game last night against Rayo Vallecano. That's the sort of reason why you don't want a Super League. What that discussion's always done is it's forgotten that the Super League conversation was about replacing UEFA, not replacing the Premier League, slash La Liga. Now, I actually think that the way the direction of travel, that court case is going in on the Super League stuff with UEFA, the thing it clears the pathway for is the idea of getting rid of national federations as much as the idea of getting rid of UEFA. And I think we're probably 3 years away from a pan-Italian, Spanish and Portuguese league to act in opposition to the Premier League, to say, you know, to be able to be as much of a media player, but then there's still a UEFA style competition that sits in the middle. That's my genuine sort of feel around that. But for that to all sort of take place, lots of things do need to change. So there is the idea of, if you want to maximise Liverpool's value over the next 15 years, you need to keep Liverpool at the top so that when the media thing does change, that's when your quid's in, that's when everyone cashes out, possibly you are able to get a meaningful return on investment year in, year out at that point. But now it could be that Fenway Sports Group are looking at it going, yeah, but that could be a long 5 years with no certainty.
Yeah.
Do we want a long 5 years with no certainty? And I think that's, in amongst all of this, these are the moving parts, and they're making a decision based on these moving parts. And the reality is, in the meantime, we're going to go and watch Derby County tomorrow night.
Yeah.
We're going to be at the Southampton game. We want Liverpool to remain as competitive as humanly possible, because there's a fighting chance that in February, we're all sat here and David Ornstein's saying, Liverpool no longer for sale.
Yeah.
The offer never came in. And you know what? It's back to business as usual. And Fenway Sports Group are briefing, well, there's a plan, and this is the plan, and this is how we're going to go.
And that was the interesting point at the end of it, about remaining committed. And actually, I saw Ornstein's interview on TalkSport, and he was like, he doubled down on that, like, final sense to say it. That's absolutely the case. They are absolutely committed to, you know, to making sure that Liverpool is still successful and blah, blah, blah. And again, which goes back to my point, because there's no value in them to devalue Liverpool.
Exactly that. And I think that that's the key thing to remember. At this point, what they don't want, the thing they don't want more than anything, let's say Liverpool is now hypothetically worth $4 billion. You can do the thing where you say things are only worth what people are prepared to pay for them. But let's just say hypothetically Liverpool are worth $4 billion. You can have a situation here, I think, where ultimately they decide to keep the status quo for the next couple of years. What they need is for Liverpool after that couple of years to be worth at least $4 billion, if not $5 billion, because if not, well, we've made a mess of this and we've done the wrong thing. So I think that that's an important point around all of this, that there's no mileage in any way, shape or form for Fenway in the asset becoming less valuable. It's the one thing that's crystal clear. And all the way through, all the ownership conversations, all the ownership arguments, all the bullshit on social, all the people who view football as this Which, by the way, is a what I'm about to say is a perfectly valid way to view football, because we're not all lucky enough to go to games. I'll say what I always say, there's only 3,000 at away games. Let's remember that in terms of people can turn up. There's only 55,000 at Anfield. So let's not pour scorn on people who don't have the same lived experience that we're lucky enough to have at times. But there is a solid chunk of football supporters in general and Liverpool supporters for whom the transfers and the ins and outs matter.
Yeah.
The soap opera matters. And then you get to see part of the soap opera is then what you watch through a screen that plays out on a pitch.
Actually, it's the wrestling thing of like, you're more interested in the things that go on outside of the ring. When you turn, some people are like, oh, well, that's a bit boring, the stuff that happens once it all kicks off. You want the story, you want the thing, the transfers are a huge part, the pageantry around it is the biggest part.
And just to follow on from something Neil was saying then, there's short, medium and long-term plans for every single business. Now, the short-term plans are
being... Shit, is there meant to be? Long-term plans
are not going to
I've
be
I've been reading a lot of stuff at the minute. 180 days is the most you're meant to plan ahead post-COVID. Don't worry, boys.
But FSG won't be thinking like that, and they can't possibly. No. So that, of course, they're going to be committed because the plans are already in place for the future of this football club. They are not going to go, the club's up for sale. Just put that folder away for January transfer window. There is literally no point. Yeah. We're not going to open that.
Mike Gordon's not got his feet up in his office playing Tetris.
No.
Yeah.
We might do.
No, but it's true, isn't it? You know, and that's the thing. We do oversimplify, I think, and we find that nothing has exacerbated this more than, imagine, COVID and the world we live in now, of boiling things down to the simplest possible thing to try and make it understandable. Sometimes things have got a lot more moving parts to them. Right, we're going to pick up in part two a kind of more on the what happens next and how we're feeling all about it, and a bit of reference to us, you know, what we kind of all been through, because I know there's a lot of Liverpool fans who weren't Liverpool fans 12 years ago or whatever.
Years,
I know, it's mad, isn't it? And don't really know what it was that Liverpool kind of went through in that spell. So we'll have a little bit of a chat around that, and again, prepare ourselves as best as possible for what's going to happen in the coming weeks and months. But in the meantime, yeah, we've got our sponsor, Who Knows Wins, and here's Chris and Steve. Chris and Steve.
Hey everyone, it's time for the Who Knows Wins update this week, Steve and Chris. So about what happened last week for us lot. Spoiler alert, wasn't great. And then have a little look ahead to what's ahead on this week in terms of Who Knows Wins. So yeah, Chris, we entered in two leagues this week. Do you want to...
I was the best of a bad bunch, I feel.
Yeah, I'd say that's fair. So yeah, just a very, very quick one just to let you know, as you can see on the screen there. This was in the Pick 10 League. So Chris got 4 right. Me and Paul only got 3 right. Didn't win any money. Congratulations to Coffee Denise 20, who bagged $3,000 for getting 8 right. So even though Coffee Denise got 2 answers incorrect, on any other bet, accumulates that kind of stuff. Zilcho, 0, nada. 8 out of 10 was good enough because idiots like me and Chris were playing to win $3,000. So congratulations there. We also played in the specific Liverpool versus Tottenham, or rather Tottenham versus Liverpool game, and again, didn't go particularly great for us.
Once again, I was best of a bad bunch.
Joint best with me this time.
I managed to enter my team.
Me and you both got 4 points. Paul only got 3. And then congratulations to Fleet Kroll. You got 9 out of 10 and won a grand as well. Obviously, as we come up towards... I say the end of the season. I keep saying end of the season. It's not the end of the season. It's this little mini winter break. Liverpool have got some games to play already. This week we've got the Derby County game, which will be coming up very, very shortly, as when you're watching this. We've also got Southampton at the weekend. So yeah, we're going to be doing Who Knows Wins Leagues on both of those specific games. So yeah, get yourselves involved. Got some of the categories here very, very quickly, the kind of things that you'll be looking at. So in terms of Derby, again, it'll be like the half-time and full-time result, both teams to score, etc. That's the same for the Southampton game as well. So, I mean, how are we going to even select it?
I feel like I'm going to turn a corner this week. I feel like this week I'm going to get money.
One of the questions is Nunes to score on the LFC versus Derby County one. I'm going to pick no.
Yeah, I don't think he's going to play.
I don't think he's going to be on the pitch. But look, he'll end up coming on and scoring a hat-trick or something. So that's where that one is. And then also, and I'll bring this one up on the screen very, very quickly for everyone at home. If you scroll down on the homepage to the Pick 10 League, there it is right now. We'll also be picking this weekend's results from across Europe, these games are. So we've got City, Brentford, St Mirren versus Rangers. Do you reckon loads of people got done by Rangers losing?
Yeah, St Johnstone beat them, didn't they? Yeah. I mean, I had Rangers.
Everyone did. I think that was one of the reasons why it didn't take 10 to win. Yesterday, got Bournemouth, Everton, Cardiff, Sheffield United, the Reds against Southampton, Forest, Palace, got Spurs, Leeds, West Ham, Leicester, Newcastle, Chelsea, Wolves, Arsenal. So yeah, say Europe, it was all British fixtures there, technically. Yeah, it was there or thereabouts. And just show you what one of the games looks like in terms of the game of the day. Liverpool versus Derby is there for you guys now. And like I say, you've got your full time, your both teams to score, you're over 2.5. first half result as well, over on the corners and the cards and that kind of stuff. And of course, like the last one is, will Darwin Núñez score? I'm going to be picking no for that one. So if you want to get yourselves involved with Who Knows Wins, it's very, 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 very simple. If you're watching this on the podcast, there's the QR code right there. You can just scan that on your phone. It takes you right to our page and you can get yourselves involved. If you're listening, just go to redmen.whoknowswins.com and again, get yourselves involved. Of course, UK only, gamble responsibly, over 18s, all that kind of stuff. If gambling isn't for you, that's absolutely sound. Don't get involved. If it is involved and it is for you and you want to try and beat clowns like us who aren't, I don't think we're having great success on Who Knows Wins this year. I felt last year went better for us. I think this year the unpredictability of the Premier League is not helping us,
and us being a bit rubbish has not helped either,
and Liverpool being a bit rubbish because we backed the boys all the time. Maybe that was what's working against. But listen, we backed them this weekend and we still only ended up getting four right, so maybe it's not, maybe it's just something to do with us. Chris, what do you think?
I think it's a bit of both. We're not very good at it, and Liverpool aren't very good, and we are kind of deluded fans.
I think,
but that's okay. That's the type of fan I want to be. Yeah. I'd rather be a supporter. I'd rather be going and backing my side to win things. I'm not one of those people who feels good about winning money when Liverpool lose. I'd rather win money when Liverpool win.
Yeah, so fingers crossed if Liverpool can start winning some footy matches starting this week. Like I say, if they can get past Derby and Southampton, I've got a feeling they are going to win both of those games, and I'm going to go heavy on the overs for Liverpool. I'm going to have them to win both halves, win the full time. I'm going to go no on the all both teams to score that. I think on both of those games I really fancy the Reds, although anybody could be the Southampton manager. They could have hired Pochettino and Rafa Benitez combination or something, and they come and dog a 1-0, but we'll find out when we get to that one. But yeah, Chris, thanks very much for joining us. Thanks all you guys for getting involved. Like I say, if you want to get involved, redmen.whoknowswins.com, the link's in the description. There's the QR code, get yourselves enrolled. And yeah, let's get back to the podcast.
Yes, welcome back, welcome back. Yeah, we're still chatting Liverpool ownership situations because, again, poor old Bobby Firmino, I'd love to give him more time and attention. The poor bastard missing out on his final World Cup, more than likely. Then again, who knows? He's eternal, isn't he?
It's Brazil.
It's Brazil, yeah, yeah. I mean, Dani Alves is in the squad, just to make that, just to reiterate that point. But yeah, thanks to everyone who's obviously interacted with us so far in the comments and all that kind of stuff. Obviously real sort of mixed sentiments, and it's hard to kind of pick a lot of it out between people just saying the obvious things that they say online and people having genuine thoughts and opinions on it. I kind of want to get first, before we kick on, how we're feeling about it, because, you know, I've just got a real feeling of low-level anxiety around this whole thing. And, you know, I tried to explain on Twitter last night, which I know is always a bit of a hand to nothing, but, you know, we launched Red Men in the summer of 2010. You know, we originally pitched it. Rafa was still boss when we originally pitched it the year before to Liverpool. We then put it live on YouTube during the World Cup 2010, and I think the first tweet off the Red Men account was like, "I can't believe they've sacked Rafa," you know. And then the Hicks and Gillette stuff was well reaching ahead by that point, and we were covering protests outside the grounds. You know, the Spirit of Shankly did the thing on the steps of St George's Hall and all that kind of stuff. That's not to say that this is exactly what's going to happen again, because you might get owners that you're absolutely sound with. But that, my problem is the cautionary tale of what we've been through before. David Moore's reaching a point with the club where he felt he didn't have the money to compete with in a Chelsea Premier League, with a Man United dominated Premier League, and having to go out and find somebody who had that more cash reserves or whatever. It feels so familiar when all I'm seeing in the comments here is FSG is so tight and they can't afford to bankroll Liverpool and blah, blah, blah.
I think that's there's always been, for tons and tons of reasons, in terms of the sort of the maturation of Liverpool's online conversation, to be honest with you, has always been, but we are around 07 to 2010. You know, there's this idea that I think some people, I think there's been a genuine sort of feeling that for any one of a variety of reasons where the current ownership is concerned as though there should have been protests about X, Y, or Z. A lot of it does come back to transfer spend, but it's not. I don't want to be quite as reductive as that and say that it all comes down to that. People who were part of that knew how hard that was. You know, from 2007 onwards, doing the stuff I was doing back then with Spirit of Shankly.
Were you the chair?
I was media vice chair, and then stepped away. It was a very heady 8 months, and it was no fun whatsoever. Like it turned your life upside down. It was practically impossible. And you were just having rows, constantly having rows. The football club was basically one massive argument. You go to the match and you'd have murder. Like, I never enjoyed, in comparison, I've always written, you know, the 08-09 title season versus title charge season versus the 13-14 title charge season. Like, if I could relive one, I'd relive 13-14 all day. 08-09 was absolutely brutal, genuinely brutal in ways that people have just sort of forgotten. The day we went to Real Madrid and won the away leg 1-0, there was a massive citywide rumour that they'd sacked Rafa. That everyone who was part of it and active and supporting the club at that point, genuinely, people thought they'd sacked Rafa that day because it was just everywhere. And it's a really weird thing back then to sort of think about now, but it was what it was like. You're waking up in anxiety in the night for the manager because of the way in which he was being treated.
We played them, remember the Klinsmann rumours?
Yeah.
There was a protest of thousands of people as it marched on Anfield ahead of one of the Champions League
games. It was the Rafa Tola, and it was absolutely wild, and all of this stuff was mad, and it wasn't good, and it wasn't fun. And as I say, it literally sort of shook lives upside down. It changed my life, ultimately, in the long term, from a positive point of view. It has had knock-on effects to a lot of other people, some of whom it will also be negative. You know, it's not one straightforward thing, but all the way through, one of the things has been, you don't want to go back there. No one wants to go back there. Who was there? No one wants to go back there. It wasn't, let's do this to watch the world burn. Because when you were part of that, it was unbelievably hard work. And it wasn't as though the fans spoke with one voice, let's be crystal clear. Mm-hmm. Quite the opposite at times. Because
there were multiple groups. So yeah. there was obviously Spurs of Shanghai, but there was Help Save LFC. We were quite close with the time. There was the Black Shirt protests and all that kind of stuff.
But that you've all you frame there is the people who wanted change.
Yeah.
The majority of supporters didn't.
Yeah.
Until it became crystal clear how awful the situation was, at which point they were like, oh yeah, it was like that all along. I remember doing marches around the ground with SOS, being clapped on by people who were in pubs. Going, well, why aren't you on the march? If you're going to clap, why aren't you? You'd have a row all of a sudden. What are you doing? Get out. And all of this stuff was just really, really hard. And you just don't want to go back there under any circumstances, to be honest with you. And I understand the idea of a low level of anxiety. And I think that again is, we're literally talking about different people's lived experiences. When you've lived that, when you've gone to a ground and you want, I always say it, you know, when you've gone to a ground and you do not want that ownership to be in charge of that football club to the point that you are part of a protest against them, that's a deeply unpleasant way to support a football club. Yeah. And you do not want to reach that point if you can avoid it. And the idea of a change in ownership, which could bring that about, is obviously going to be concerning to the people who went through that the first time around. And in amongst all of that as well, there's now actually, you know, in amongst the shadow board that's been pulled together by the club in the aftermath of the Super League, there is now sort of levers in place. The Articles of Association have changed for Liverpool. That board has to exist. Any new ownership would have to change the articles again to get rid of them, at which point you'd be dealing with protests, you'd be dealing with kickoffs. But someone might just come in, some absolute head case might just come in and decide day one, yeah, I don't care.
Yeah, yeah, I'll whip them up, it's fine.
And then from there, within the situation where we're all whipped up, day one, day 10, day 100, if they don't like what they're hearing. And that's the uncertainty, and that's why I think there is some low-level anxiety for some people around it. For other people, again, and everyone's got different experiences, it might just be, yeah, but I'm just prepared to see it all be massively different. And if that person comes in and hugely irritates a lot of the match-going supporter base, but simultaneously puts in £500 million a year on transfers and wages, well, I'll back that person. And then you've got a situation where you've got a schism in the fan base that's absolutely enormous.
Man United.
Yeah, which examples like that do exist, you know, and all of this is difficult, and it is likely to be fraught if there is going to be a really significant change. We just don't know what that is yet. I'd ask you to try not to be anxious, Paul, solely because the future is unknown and it is unwritten, you know, and that might add to the anxiety, but it shouldn't do. We can only deal with what's in front of us as much as humanly possible. And anyone else listening to this, we've got to try to sort of just stay in the mental space of we deal with what's in front of us, but we've been there before in the bad place, and no one wants to go back to the bad place.
How are you feeling,
Chris? Well, I feel a little bit scared about what the future holds, to be honest with you. A little bit of trepidation in there. You know, there's a tinge of excitement as well about us, you know, potentially being better than we are. What I find most interesting is actually probably who you would describe, it's an overgeneralisation, so apologies, no offence meant here. The people who are quite negative about the football club seem to be the people who want FSG out. The people who are quite positive about the football club have never really been FSG in, but have been positive with what's going on the team, with Jürgen Klopp and where the direction of the club is going. It's actually a flip reversal now. The people who were negative are really positive about the future, and the people who are positive are actually more negative positive about what the future holds, and I find that quite a quite an interesting thing where
24-hour sea
everybody's
change
flipped. And it's just an interesting thing as humans. It's something that when you get what you want, you are more positive. When you don't quite understand where you are, which I think I'll talk for myself, I don't necessarily want FSG in charge, but I don't necessarily want them not in charge at the same time. They've always existed in a grey area for me because I can see the positives and the negatives of what they've done at the football club.
I try nearly praises, like, I don't give a fuck who Liverpool's owners are, but when I realise, like, no, I mean, what I mean is, when I'm talking about FSG, is I don't really care who they are. I just care about how the football club's run. I really just want to I do just want to care about the football team.
So I, what I want, I don't, you know, I've got my list of what I don't want. I don't want to be run by fascists. I don't want to be run by a state. I don't want to be run by an attention-seeking bellend. I've got what I do want to be run by, people who care about the well-being of the club on and off the pitch, people who will hire the best possible people at all levels of the club, right the way down to what you could view as the very bottom of the club. Get the right people in place all the way through. That's what you want, and you can sort of go through this list. But there's also something else that I don't want and I've never wanted. I don't want an owner's name on a banner. I think that the stuff that you've seen at other clubs, you know, Chelsea, Manchester City, it's downright embarrassing. And ultimately, owners don't win football trophies, footballers do. And I do not want to, firstly, I don't want to see, you know, if Fenway Sports Group, who've been, you know, in charge of Liverpool over this period, where you can look at a number of things and think that they've done pretty well. Simultaneously, I'm not going to be crying any tears, nor am I going to be going on television going, but, you know, goodbye England's Rose. I'm not going to be doing any of that nonsense because ultimately they're just some rich people who've owned the football club.
And done
in some ways a pretty good job of it over an extended period, got other bits and pieces wrong. But you've got your lines where there's just things I just don't want to be owned by, the stuff I don't want to be associated with, the stuff that I don't want to cheer on, but also what I don't want to cheer on, genuinely, I do not want to cheer on an ownership.
Yeah.
And the formulation...
And sorry to jump in, but that's, I think what you found is this. Do you remember John Stewart famously went on, like, Fox with his equivalent over there, and the guy talked about there being a left-wing agenda, and John Stewart was like, there's no such thing as a left-wing agenda. There is now, but back then there wasn't. And he said, you presume that because you've got a right-wing agenda that there must be a left-wing, and that's where this FSGL thing has come from. There's people who don't want them to be owners, and they presume that they therefore must be the equal and opposite in a position. So if you don't want out, you therefore must be in, and you were kind of alluding to this, Chris. It's by and large not the case. It's just a bunch of fellas putting money into the club.
People who think about the ownership all the time and will talk to me as they're thinking about the ownership all the time are presuming I'm thinking about the ownership all the time, but in a positive way. And I genuinely never want to think about who Liverpool's owners are, ever. I never, ever, ever, in an ideal world, would never want to think about or talk about Liverpool's owners. I would like them ultimately to be robotic drones who just go about their business and are meant to. And therefore, in a couple of ways, like the fact that, you know, John Henry does actually come over at times like a robotic drone, you know, is no bad thing as far as I'm concerned. I don't want a personality. I never want to see
genuinely, I never want to see
a thank you Roman equivalent. I never, you know, you just look at what's around City's ground about who owns them and the impact they're meant to have had, and the idea that the support are meant to say thank you. I do not want to thank anyone who owns Liverpool ever for anything in any way, shape or form. I never want to thank any of them.
Yeah.
I don't want to thank them when they, you know, and again, this can take a particularly dark turn, but there was a mini outpouring around David Moores recently. I just kept my mouth shut. I think I'm right in saying, because my point about this is, lad, you had a job here on Liverpool for a bit, you did all right. And I don't want to seem really reductive there, but the most I ever want to say to anyone anyway, broadly, is well in, because we're all just trying to do something.
Yeah.
But ultimately, I do not want to thank the billionaires, any of them. So, you know, bring me some new ones. I'm not going to want to thank them either. John Henry, you know, Tom Werner, Mike Gordon, whoever you want. I don't want to thank yous. You have come in, you've done a job. If they sell Liverpool and make 10 times the money that they made, there's your fucking thanks.
Yeah.
All the best, boys. You got what you wanted, and we all move on. And that's my position, and that is genuinely what I don't want. I don't want even the sense for a second that that's what we're meant to be doing that either. So I don't have to protest on the one hand, and I don't want to be having to, you know, to paraphrase Roy Hodgson.
I don't want
a
bunch of Liverpool fans in fucking shake outfits celebrating outside the fucking cop.
And my head would explode.
And that's it. But what I want is, I want a football side to support, and I want a side that is filled with players that I actually really respect. You know, it's filled with personalities of people who do good things off the football pitch with the money that they're making, who clearly take big things and what's important to fans, like Jordan Henderson and the lads did in Rome away, and had that Sean Cox flag. Yep. That is something that stuck with me since there, is one of the best things I've seen on a football pitch from any group of lads across any fucking sport, because there's an understanding of what the fan base needs in that exact time. Yep. That's what I want from my football club. And I was asked a question yesterday off camera of, would you rather have someone with unlimited funds but you're guaranteed success, or, you know, they're owned, you're owned properly in your eighth? And I think it took me a little second or two to think about it, but as long as my football club's my football club, and I've most of my life Liverpool have finished between eighth and third in the Premier League, and it's not something that I particularly want to go back to seeing. I want the opportunity of winning those trophies, but we've been a really lucky fan base. We have sustained trophies throughout our barren periods, not the one that we wanted, of course, but I will still support my Liverpool team. The ownership questions whether I support my football team, because the wrong owners means I morally, and as a principled person, or as a person I like to believe I am principled, yeah, I've got a really big question to ask, and that's where the fear comes from.
It's just got that thing, and it, again, not to boil it down too simply, but it's like, do you want to be married to a superstar supermodel who's just absolutely incredible, looks great on Instagram, but is vapid and hates you, and you have a really horrible cold life? Or do you want someone who's like, who's homely and looks after you and cares for you? The truth lies actually somewhere in, you want the whole thing, don't you? You want the perfect package, and it exists, but unfortunately, when it comes to football stuff, there's no good billionaires.
Asked yesterday, Paul, who's your ideal owner? Well, it's someone who's the top 10 richest people in the world, who's done it the right way. All right, I've just ruled them all out, so apologies there. That happened to be a Liverpool fan from age 3, or they came to it from age 20, and has so much money that it is just a vanity project that they want to make their football team the best in the world. It probably isn't going to happen, but that's my dream.
The Super League stuff was like the fucking League of Evil fucking meeting, wasn't it? You know what I mean? It was like all of the supervillains of the world getting together, and it's like, well, why are you a supervillain? Oh, well, you know, I created a death ray that destroyed all these kind of people. Oh, well, I once shot a big hole in the moon. You know, and they're all fucking evil, but they've all come at it from different ways, and they've all decided to get together as a big club. And so when you saw like John Emery and Van all having dinner, when it was obviously like the genesis of where the Super League kind of thing kind of came from, you're like, oh god, you know, they're all coming at it from different angles, but they're all broadly bellends in their own way. But it goes back to your thing of look at fucking Cardiff, you know what I mean? You could get or what was happening at Hull, when you got people who could come in and be like, just change the colour of the kit. Why? Because I want to, because I fancy doing it. Like, you mean, that's terrifying, and it shouldn't. And I thought Andy Heaton actually put a good string of tweets out last night. Andy Heaton, always a good follow, because he's an argumentative gentleman, and
it's a rare good string of tweets. All right.
but he spelled it out quite nicely, and it's my general take on this whole sports washing thing, is I don't see a sports washing entity buying Liverpool, because I'm not sure you can do it at that level. And I remember, I thought this about Chelsea as well at the time, is that you're more likely to get people who just see it in terms of a money making exercise, rather than trying to cover up an entire regime, because we're just pains in the arse, and we shine a light on too many things, I think, anyway. For someone like, for it works at Newcastle and it works at City, because you've got these, like, it's like fucking liberators coming in and freeing your town and promising you all these goodies, whereas we'd be like, nah, you're all right, stick them up your arse, we'll keep what we've got.
The liberator thing I think is really important. Like, I've the area on the Newcastle conversation where I've got such enormous sympathy is, whilst I don't think Saudi Arabia should be allowed to own a football club, nor do I think Mike Ashley should be. You could end up, you know, that's a perfectly valid position, I think, to, and again, literally, you can have an extended conversation about who should or shouldn't own our football clubs. You mentioned before about the way in which American sports are run, all the best being an overseas investor and getting involved in American sports, the way in which that system works, and
it's not going to happen.
And yet, it's open season over here, and we've decided that, well, when I say we, no one invited any of us or most supporters into the room, but it's been decided that that's absolutely fine, and you can fill your boots broadly with, it's not called the fit and proper person test anymore, they've renamed it, but it's still not worth the paper it's written on. So all of that's, you know, a difficult and a complex thing in amongst there. And I think Andy's argument is that because Liverpool will always be bigger than the thing that, to an extent, is trying to be sports washed in this arena, I hasten to add. It's not, you know, countries are bigger than football clubs, but in this arena, it will always be Liverpool first and foremost. And then you've got the element of the way in which some Liverpool supporters may react to that sort of thing. Complex makes it even more complex one more time. Then you end up in this sort of all right, what is the, what's the upside? And, you know, unless it really is a truly benign dictatorship of some description, it's hard to see where that upside is.
Yeah. And when you've got Liverpool, because the moment, you know, you've got
the one thing that we're not considering, sorry to interrupt, Paul, the one thing we're not considering here is if it's your neighbours who you fucking hate who've got a big fucking shiny toy and you just want a bigger one.
Yeah. That's also true. That's a fair point.
Yeah, yeah. True. The thing we've got with ours, though, is that, you know, look at the man, again, just to look at the Man City stuff, you've got like the football leaks and you've got all the things that go around. You've got journalists diving into things. But Man City fans have turned a blind eye to it, you know, largely, not exclusively, but largely. And there were some Newcastle protests the other week, but where's the publicity around that? Where's the size of that? Where's that? Doesn't look like there's a broad appetite for it. And of course, Liverpool have got this huge global fan base now, and there will be just hundreds of thousands of Liverpool fans who won't give a fuck if Liverpool are buying Jude Bellingham and they're buying Mbappes and all that kind of stuff, because that will cut paper all over that. But you will have large groups of Liverpool actively looking into every single deal that that's getting done.
That, but also Liverpool are just a bigger story than Man City and Newcastle. Yeah. Part of the reason why Man City, the ownership of Man City are up the wall with Liverpool in general is because we're the story. I mentioned 13-14 before. The story of 13-14 wasn't who won the title. That was Manchester City. It was Liverpool. Because Liverpool are just a bigger story and a bigger draw. So a lot of this stuff, you're not going to get your 6 months of honeymoon, which allows you to lean where you need to lean and put pressure on where you need to put pressure on. That, for instance, I would argue Newcastle broadly got, with one or two very honourable exceptions. You know, you're not going to get that coming to Liverpool from day one. You're going to get the absolute microscope on everything from the supporters, but also from a media who know that Liverpool will get your clicks. Just get your clicks all day, every day. And also, you'll get your hate clicks. So if Liverpool are, in some way, shape or form, Liverpool's ownership is deeply morally deficient, you'll get clicks from Manchester United supporters, you'll get clicks from Blues, you'll get clicks from all this section of people who will want to say, yeah, the fucking Scouse bastards, the way in which they've decided to take the moral high ground for many a year and look at them now, etc. etc.
Like we had a choice in the matter.
But it wouldn't matter, but it would still be, it would pile and pile. It'd be never ending. And I think that that's something to really bear in mind here, is that whoever comes in next as an owner, that the scrutiny is there from day one from us, but also from a worldwide media who will be all over your every transgression.
Yeah.
All the best.
Yeah, no, it's true. And this is my thing about it. You mentioned it at the top, Neil. Prepare yourselves, brace yourselves for all the transfer-related PR coming in. So it's all going to be, that's the forefront, because that's the key to so many football fans' hearts. They're winning the hearts and minds is telling them all the shiny new things they're going to get if and when this kind of thing goes through. And we're going to see, and also going to be so many racism accusations thrown around. I've seen it on Twitter already, as though questioning whether, you know, states that don't give women equal rights, and literally, you know, you're literally not allowed to be gay in certain countries, as if it's an issue to question those things. It should be a fucking massive issue. It's not racism to question that, but you're going to see a ton of that thrown around, and you can already see it already, the toxicity around that kind of stuff. Again, it's pre-prepared ourselves for that, because that we're dipping our toe into that already.
And it's going to roll. And the point about this now is that, so I was all the way through this, you know, there's going to be a lot of journalists are going to decamp to the World Cup. Mm-hmm. A lot of people who cover football professionally are going to decamp to the World Cup, and the World Cup's going to happen, but there's going to be a lot of people who aren't going. And it's not like, you know, it's not like the Daily Mirror are going to furlough all the journalists who aren't going to the World Cup. They might encourage them to take a bit of time off, but everyone who covers domestic football is still going to be looking for things to write about. Transfers are going to be a big part of that, but now Liverpool are going to be in amongst all of this. You know, it is going to drive that sort of attention in a couple of ways. You could argue it's good for things like us, but I'd rather have the time off. I'd rather have had a quiet, like, I was very committed to a quiet couple of weeks.
Because it's your slaughterhouse breakfast.
Yeah, I was committed to that sort of thing. I was committed to a bit of self-care. So genuinely, if this is one of those times where genuinely I wish I had the sort of relationship with Fenway Sports Group people sometimes say I did, because I just basically give someone a bell and go, listen, can you just give me a timeline, because I'm trying to book a holiday around all of this. But that is the sort of going to be the difficult bit, I think, is that we're going to have to put up with the fact that scrutiny is going to be present anyway before all the other stuff, you know, before the reality sort of hits. It is going to come. It's going to, you know, we're literally talking about it now. It's going to broil, and we're going to have to put up with it. And it is a bit of a shame because you, again, and this is back to, in the same way, the thing I said before, like, I don't want a state, I don't want a fascist, I don't want an attention-seeking bellend. this is now in the attention-seeking bell-end area, without sort of saying that that's what Fenway have done, because I don't think it is, but you're now in this thing where I just don't want off-the-pitch stuff from Liverpool being in the headlines. I just don't enjoy it when that's the case.
Yeah.
I don't want to have to go on Sky and be speculative about X or Y. I don't want someone saying to me, as they're saying to you, so, you know, rank these billionaires in order of desirability is not a conversation I ever want. I'd rather talk about Stiggy and Gibiona be with you again.
Yeah, and I'm there for it, and we'll talk about Leonardo another time. But moving the conversation on slightly, it's also like we've got a fella in charge who's so in tune with us, I think, you know, in his philosophies as football fans and as people, that actually that concerns me as well. And that you know, Jürgen Klopp in his position, should a regime come in that we're probably thinking we wouldn't like, where does Jürgen Klopp stand on this? Because just last week he was speaking about it in a press conference, yeah, and the world burned for fucking hours after he had the gall to call out journalists and a regime that he didn't agree with and a World Cup and a time that he didn't agree with. What the fuck would Jürgen Klopp do?
The only side to this is that, because we've had this conversation a lot with Alex Ferguson at Man United, who clearly decided to kind of throw Manchester United long term under the bus just to give himself that last couple of years of Ferrari. He was kind of taken in, I guess, by the money side of things or whatever, because he wasn't and remains very quiet over the Manchester ownership situation. You'd like to think Klopp would have more, but there is a little point where you go, do you want 5 years of just being bankrupt with anything to get whatever you want? And you don't know where people's morals stand.
He came to us for
that,
a project, remember?
Yeah.
When he could have gone to Manchester United at the time or something.
It's
as
different,
well,
so, though, isn't it? When you're in and you've got your house and you've got your fucking
world. And
your
we're talking about, it wasn't exactly that he hasn't been bankrolled either. He's had a lot of money to spend. I just think he enjoys the coaching side of things a lot more than the transfer side of things, which is actually really interesting, because I like the football more than the transfers. And I like to see players improve, and I want players to improve more than you can just replace them and get somebody signed who's maybe better and stuff. So it's a difficult one, and Jürgen, I think, would have a very difficult decision to make.
I think the difficult part is the bit that concerns me, really, in that I think if things go in any direction of change, Jürgen will feel first and foremost like he's got a responsibility to the football club, then he'll feel like he's got a responsibility to his players, but he does also have a responsibility to what sort of thing he wants to be associated with, and that could lead him to make a couple of difficult decisions. But it's more like, for it, I mean, I'm in, you know, without being sarcastic about it, I'm pleased it's Derby on Wednesday, because it's Pep Linders who's doing the next press conference.
Yes.
And Pep can just sort of go, listen, don't even, you know, not for me this one, you just crack on.
Do you want to get slightly too much insight into the tactics we're going to be playing instead?
Any chance we can use an interpreter today for me? Just pretend I don't speak English.
But now be the full hit of no, but I'll tell you exactly how Calvin Ramsey's going to help us play out from the back.
Yeah, and then
he will, and it'll be great. But I think that'll help. But I think, you know, the manager's then going to have to do this one before Southampton. There's going to be an eagerness to get him on the record
and
to
this
say
is where,
something.
Sorry, Neil, this is where we need the owners to not throw the manager under the bus for once, as is always the way. You know, we've seen Manchester City owners throw Pep Guardiola under the bus. This is a problem, you know, because at some point owners need to stop throwing the managers and the players under the bus. In much the same way that the journalists that Jürgen was complaining about last week throw the players under the bus and the manager Gareth Southgate going over there rather than the people who made the decisions.
Yeah, but he's got to go to a press conference. He's outspoken on these issues. He has been. He's going to be pressed on it. He's going to have an answer. I suspect his answer will be, I don't know, I've been told nothing at this point. But then what they'll try to do is get him to commit to, this is what I think about X or Y. And
give him something to hang himself with down the line.
And I just think, you know, there's a part of me that's just a bit like, yeah, but can he be bothered? Like, genuinely, because he just wants to coach his footballers and get a result against Southampton. And so he's going to have that. And we know he doesn't enjoy the press conferences, I think, particularly anyway. I don't think that's a controversial view. And I can understand why, and that's not sort of disparaging anyone who's involved in the whole thing. It's the same people asking very similar questions in the same setting week after week, and ultimately
without a mic.
And ultimately it's what Jürgen makes
annoying.
Of it. Yeah, and ultimately it's what Jürgen makes of it in that period. And, you know, I suspect he'll turn up on Friday and just be a bit like, right, let's just get this over with, and it'll be as quick as possible. But the point being is that post an ownership change, the first conversation is going to be, what do you think of the owners? Post, you know, any controversy that comes out about them over a period of time, Jürgen's going to be the one who's going to be told, you've got to deal with this.
He's been very public and his support of the current ownership, which I always think felt massively at odds with how you, if you just dipped your toe into the social media reaction to stuff, always felt massively, you know, it always felt massively odd. We're going to do a bit about that. We're going to do podcast extra. We're called the FSG Apologist Special, which will follow this, because I want to kind of talk to Neil about his experience of all of this, because obviously we live in this bizarre little world from different, you know, doing very similar things in the space. But my sort of final take on it, I guess, is, and I've said this a number of times, so you, apologies to Chris, who's heard this, me saying this for years now, but City have got, like, if you're playing Pontoon, City are sat on 21 with them owners, because they'll move heaven and earth to make sure that they stay at the top. They'll spend any amount of money and they'll find every little tiny loophole to make sure that everything works in their favour. I think we've got owners who are somewhere between an 18 and a 19, and to that point you can twist. And you might land with the absolute perfect ownership group that's got everything they've got, but actually you don't have to worry about any questionable morals behind them. But having been through what we've been through, you're more likely to go bust, and it depends how prepared you are to take the gamble. So, and you're right, we're going to forever be asked these questions. We've always had it, like, what would happen if? Until we know more info, I can't know how I'm going to feel in a year's time or 2 years' time, and I can't actually know. And it's about Jürgen. Like, until someone throws a 500 million transfer budget at Jürgen, he can't even know himself how he's going to react to that kind of situation. His desire to come out on top might absolutely override all of his models, and we might all have them issues. So I don't want to be one of those guys going, I'll walk away from Liverpool forever, because such a significant part of my life and always has been. I can't imagine a world where I don't follow the lads in red, not going to Anfield and stuff. But until we see what happens, it's hard to know how we're gonna live with that, really. But yeah, anyway, shit. This, I see all the people dead excited. I'd love to be super excited about it, but I just feel it's a bit. It feels like naivety to be totally like, oh, but imagine all the players will sign, because I just don't see how it comes, Scott. What do you have to give up to get that? Yeah, anyway. Thanks to everyone who's joined us live. Good to speak about a lot of these things. Again, I'm certain there'll be plenty more to talk about in the coming days, weeks and months. Keep your thoughts coming in the comments. Yeah, we're going to be doing podcast extra immediately after this, which is our uncensored podcast, where we chat about life, politics, and all the shit that people shout at us for on the public forums. I'm sure Neil will be very, very well-versed in all that. Keep politics out of the podcast, Neil.
Absolutely not.
Exactly. So, yeah, come
the
over
podcast
to
is politics.
Yeah, 100%. Head over to redmenplus.com and join us for Podcast Extra. It promises to be very good fun indeed, and we'll see you over there. Ta-da.
Thanks for listening. If you want even more Bosch content and podcasts just like this, go over to redmenplus.com and sign up now.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
So, Robert, tell the people, what's a pretendian?
It's just what it sounds like, Angel, a pretend Indian.
Someone who fakes being one of us?
Someone who impersonates a native.
We're talking about real scammers and con artists.
There are pretendians teaching at universities, pretendians running governments, pretendians in Hollywood.
On our new podcast, Pretendians, we'll tell you the incredible story of these jaw-dropping frauds.
Who are they? Why do they do it? And how the heck do they keep getting away with it?
Listen to Pretendians on Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.